利菲亚拟获得日本执政党自民党的提名，参选将在7月10号举行的日本国会参议员选举。从你身上我们可以看到许多标签，包括33岁的你是这次选举中最年轻的参选人，在以男性为主要组成的日本政界争取一席之地，同时你还是全球第一位由执政党背书的维吾尔裔政治参选人，你的海外经验以及多元文化的背景在同质性高的日本社会是非常独特的。首先想请你和我们说说，你认为在这一次的选举当中你拥有哪些优势，当中是不是也有存在一些两面刃，某一些特质为参选增添一些挑战呢？
No, it's a very good question. I think it's, you know, a double-edged sword. The advantages is that because I have these labels, I, you know, immediately get more attention. And in the world of campaigning, especially, you know, because I started campaigning just a month ago, and, you know, a month ago I was a UN official with no name,And it was almost my job not to broadcast my name or my work, right? It was part of my job to be sort of quiet and silent, and hidden within an organization. So to come from that, and to become a public figure in a month. So, you know, there are different labels, right? Like you said, I graduated from Georgetown, so I'm a Hoya. I'm also a Uyghur. I'm also Japanese. All of those things define me.But, you know, I think it's important that we all wait for the person to identify themselves before we identify them. And that's been one of my struggles with this campaign is that, you know, throughout my selection process with LDP, I felt that there was so much respect towards how I wanted to identify myself. So in none of the interview processes or selection processes, you know, have they asked, you know, what my identity was or how that impacts my policy. It was much more of, okay, this is your background, this is your name, and what is your policy and what do you want to do for Japan, which I really, really appreciated. But when you come out into the public, you know, you're a public figure and you're sort of up for any kind of comments and criticisms. And I struggled in the beginning of my campaign with a lot of, I think, identities that were sort of given to me,by the public or through social media, through conversation, as opposed to identities that I wanted to sort of explain for myself. And especially in the beginning, I think it was that, you know, a lot of people focused on the fact that I was Uyghur, which is fine. But for me, the greater part of my identity, especially running for the upper house in Japan, is the fact that I was born in Kitakyushu, as you said. And I am, you know, a Kitakyushu woman born and raised.You know, and that's a huge core of my identity. And that's what really drives me when I see Japan or when I see where we should head as a country. The city I come from and the values I receive there is at the very core of the priorities I place for this country. And so it's a bit unfortunate that, you know, my multiple identities sort of distract from that. But at the same time, you know, being Uyghur and having gone to Georgetown, that is also at the very core of the diplomacy platform and the human rights platforms that I place. So, you know, it's multitudes of complexities that come together to sort of help me in shaping my worldview and shaping the direction I see for Japan. And I hope to be able to continue that conversation with, you know, depth and delicacy because it deserves that.
和我们说说你在中国成长的经验好吗？你居住过哪些地方？一般你是和哪些群体的互动比较多？你的维吾尔身份是否曾经让你被另眼相看呢？那另外对于新疆的这个名称，你有什么样的感觉？
So in China, I lived in Shanghai and Guangzhou mostly. My parents also lived in Beijing. Most of my teenage years were spent in China.But because I lived in China, I had the opportunity to visit the Uyghur region very often.And I've been very privileged and fortunate to be able to do so. As you might be aware, that's not quite possible currently. I haven't been able to visit since 2013. I've hesitated from visiting. And I think that's the case for many Uyghurs abroad. And as far as the term Xinjiang goes, right, you know, it's literally in Chinese, new frontier.And, you know, for me, as someone who has studied Uyghur studies, you know, it begs the question as to new to whom.Right? It's not new to everybody. For folks who are native to the region, it's not new. And I think it's important that we respect how people from the region want to call themselves. It touches back on my answer on identity. But I think we have to be very respectful of how each person wants to refer to their homeland. And for Uyghurs abroad, you know, it's, it's not Xinjiang, right? And I think that's something that needs to be respected.
对于发生在维吾尔人身上的事件，包括种族灭绝、强迫劳动、拘留营等等，你有什么样的看法？
I think it's one of the biggest human rights crises of our time. You know, there is no other way to describe it than to say that, you know, it is a genocide. I do believe it is a genocide, and there has been, being a former UN official, I also understand that, you know, the term genocide is a very heavy one. You know, I don't use it lightly, and none of us should use it lightly. And having studied the, you know, Uyghur region, and also having a background at the United Nations, and having observed the developments of the region from 2016 onwards, especially, I am very careful in saying this, and I am very carefully convinced that there is no other term that is appropriate for what is happening in the region. It is a genocide. And at the same time, you know, in terms of the global sort of human rights framework, genocide is a legal term. It needs to be given by a legal mechanism. Unfortunately, you know, the Uyghur human rights issue has not been able to go through the international legal mechanisms that we would normally have for these kinds of issues for, you know, multiple reasons. And as a result, you know, we have to sort of refer to different states who have made legal determinations with international lawyers, and also legal courts that have been made that are independent. The Uyghur Tribunal is a representative one. And most of them have determined that this is a genocide. And I think we have to respect, you know, all the independent assessments that have been done, the lead of which is the Uyghur Tribunal, but also by different governments in different states, and really act accordingly and urgently to what is happening. It is, you know, I mean, there is no rank to human rights atrocities. Every human rights atrocity is an atrocity, but genocide is at the farthest core of that. And I think how we react to this genocide will really shape the course for how we as a global community will react to every human rights crisis coming forward. I think if a crime of this extent is allowed, I think we step into a world where anything is allowed. And that is why it is really important that we continue to raise our voice and we continue to sort of underline what is right and what is, you know, what is right when it's right and what is wrong when it's wrong.
民调显示，日本社会对中国社会的好感下降，有将近80%是没有好感的。这样子的变化主要是发生在习近平上台以后，还是说从江泽民、胡锦涛时期就不太好？
China, you have a one-party state. And so when you talk about China in Japan, and I think when they're asked this question, I think they're answering, you know, vis-a-vis how they see the Chinese government and how the country is run, and how their stance has been on, you know, principles that Japan finds important, which includes democracy, human rights, international rule-based order. And it's no secret that, you know, CCP has not been, you know, has not been abiding by those principles. And so I'm not surprised by the reaction of the Japanese populace in this regard, you know, and in terms of governance, we're so different, but at the same time, we're neighboring countries. And I think, you know, we're two countries that have to live with each other and live by each other and have a deep understanding of each other because we're so close to each other. And as a result, I think those sentiments are quite complex. And again, I would be very interested in seeing how the Japanese populace sees, for example, Chinese life or Chinese development over the past 2-3 decades, as well as how they see Chinese, you know, China's record on human rights. I'm sure it's quite negative. And economic sort of relationship with China.
你怎么看日本和台湾的关系以及台湾的地位？你有没有去过台湾？那台湾很多民众对日本是非常友好的。你能感觉到日本民众同样对台湾友好吗？
It's one of the places I really, really want to go. And as far as Japan-Taiwan relations goes, you know, I think we've had a great relationship over time. And as you say, you know, it's an incredible honor that the Taiwanese feel, you know, they feel positively towards us. And I think that sentiment is mutual, you know, and again, given the sort of declining, shrinking space for democracy, shrinking space for human rights, shrinking space for international rule-based order and shrinking space for respect for sovereignty, as we see with Ukraine. I think it is paramount that Japan solidifies its relationship with Taiwan. And I think it's one of the most important relationships we have in East Asia, and I look forward to seeing that develop further.
日本社会存在哪些主要的问题？当选之后，你计划带来什么样的改变？我们知道，世界经济论坛最近有一份报告指出，日本政治权力当中的性别差距，在全球155个国家当中排名147，甚至是落后于沙特阿拉伯。你怎么看这样的现象？为什么会这样子？那对于未来女性参政率的提高，你感到乐观吗？有没有可能将美国的经验运用在改善日本的社会问题上？
It's a great question. I think we're making great progress, but we're not there yet, right? So this time, LDP, for example, has placed a 30% target to have women, you know, nominated within the party. So to have, you know, 30% of nominations be women, to be female candidates. And they've set that target and they've met that target, which is, I think, a great start. But having come from the United Nations myself and being a woman myself, I do see 30% to be quite low. I think we need to get to 50. But where we are, I think right now, sort of having, you know, all parties in unison and all politicians in unison sort of recognize that women's rights is important and women's empowerment is an issue. I think that's a great start. And I look forward to that developing further.